Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Spring of Life show, reuniting your mind, body, and spirit. Happy spring, happy Easter, happy celebration of Ishtar, the fertility goddess, and happy celebration of whatever it is that you choose to celebrate. I'm here with my co-host, Benjamin. Hey, Ben, how are you?
Fabulous, as usual, and lovely to be on the air with you, as always.
Let's talk about expectations today. I have been noticing so many expectations coming my way from other people, and also coming from other people to other people that I happen to be privy to the unfoldment of all of their luscious desires and wanting other people to make them feel good and do things for them and make their worlds happier through changing their actions or understanding them. Or, you know, and perhaps you can hear the sarcasm in my voice. It might be dripping off like syrupy, sour candy. But I got to tell you, you know, over the past week, I just feel so fed up with people denying that they are the ones that create their world, that their expectations are theirs and theirs alone. That I'm so, lately I've been finding myself a little frustrated with people's unwillingness to step into their own creator prowess, into their own powerful selves, even into the awareness that it is only ever their senses and their mental faculties that they ever experience any data out there through, and yet they make it all about everyone else. You did that, and so I'm unhappy. What do you think about that, Ben?
Really and honestly?
Not much, right? Yes, no, of course. No. I want you to lie to me because I expect that.
Well, it sounded like there might be some expectation of people to get certain things.
Yes, absolutely. And so as a result, perhaps, you know, that's why it's tickling my hook bone, so to speak, so much. And, you know, that could be true. You know, I guess I have an expectation that people, when they're suffering, are at least willing to open their minds to something that perhaps could alleviate that for them. And to the whole idea that to me seems so delicious and juicy, that they can actually stop the suffering themselves, to step into the idea that they might actually be creating it. And as a result of that, they could create something a little more lush for themselves. So yes, I too am suffering expectation state of dis-ease. Bravo. Well done. Now I expect you to agree with me.
Well, the thing is that usually one of the surefire ways of getting disappointed and eventually upset is having expectations. It just seems to automatically lend itself to being disappointed in one way or another. And thus, usually I find that when I am getting upset with the world, and it's always so fun to try and argue with the way things are, because I found myself to only lose but 100% of the time, that whenever I do get upset with the way things are, that there is some type of expectation behind that, usually for things to be different or to turn out different. Or if I was just more careful or did this or did that, then things should not have turned out this way. And whenever I do have an insistence on things being different than they are, it usually just always leads me to more and more disappointment and rigidity. It doesn't allow me the fluidity of just playing with things no matter how they come my way. And it is one of the ways that very often I'm being held back in just accept, not necessarily accepting, but being allowing with the way things are. Doesn't give me as much flexibility of actually looking at what is here now and what can I do with it. Because most often when I'm so busy arguing that things should have been another way, I'm not focusing on what I can do now and now and now and now and in one fluid motion with whatever comes my way in that moment. And thus, it's definitely expectation seems to be a way to become more rigid in not being able to dance with the world with a fluid dance rather than a rigid stepping on toes left, right, and center.
Well, right. And that I agree. And that was well spoken as always. And like it really boils down to, are we being fluid with ourselves? And for me to get frustrated, it takes quite a bit these days, you know, it and for a long time now, because I've done a lot of work and I'm pretty content and very stable in my own vibration. And I have noticed that there has been something bubbling up. And when I taste my own work and take my own medicine, so to speak, I would recognize that there is a desire that perhaps beyond, it's gone out of the desire zone, because I'm always, you know, appreciative and hopeful and desiring that people wake up and really feel good in their lives. That's why I do what I do. You know, it's why I do radio shows like this. It's why I write. It's why I work with clients and facilitate workshops and have conversations with people just in my daily life. And it's always from this perspective because I live this way and I have watched my life change in an alchemical fashion from being, you know, heavy and dense like lead, so to speak, and turn into a lighter, shinier, more fluid state such as gold. And into light, to take the density and darkness and transform it into light. And it feels better. It changes everything. And I really just love the idea of everybody on this planet stepping into that for themselves in their own unique way and creating their own unique song, because everyone has their own desires and has their own path. And that's really nice. And there's such an abundance of ideas and such an abundance of resources and all that is, that it easily facilitates that for us. But I get when there's an expectation, that is really an inside-out job, just like everything else is, and no different than anything else is. And, you know, expectations... You know, there's a saying that says pride goes before a fall. I'm having to wonder if it isn't really expectations, unmet expectations that go. And they do start within. It's not about what's going on outside. So when I look at myself and noticing these situations that are unfolding, I would presume that perhaps I am, well, forget presume and perhaps, I am acting no different by wanting others to get it. Do I have an expectation of them to get it? Not really. Not really. Do I expect, Yes, I do. I do. When I get really down and clear with myself, I do. I expect that when I propose an idea, that somebody will, who is in a state of suffering, will open to the idea and at least taste it. I don't understand if someone is hungry. That's perhaps always been, and still is, there's a part of me that doesn't quite get when somebody is, in a state of dis-ease, whether it's physical or emotional, mental, spiritual, whatever, in whatever facet and in whatever way, their life stream, when somebody offers them a nugget, a panacea, something to try, an idea to play with, how many people I've seen be so quick to say, oh, no, that's not going to work. My question always being, how do you know? Have you ever tried? More often than not, I hear, no, I haven't. I just know it won't work. All right. How do you know? There's a way in which people have expectations of the way their healing is going to come, expectations of way the suffering is going to end, expectations of how the relationship is going to unfold, expectations of people, other people hearing what they want them to hear.
Well, and that is sort of humorous in so far. If we would always already know how the suffering will end, wouldn't we then already go there? Wouldn't we already take that path if we so clearly knew how it's going to end? Usually people have a very clear idea, do this and this and that to me and then I'll be okay. But if it was so clear that what they needed was exactly that, then usually they would have gone down that path already. But that's not always the case.
Well, and that's it. They don't know. And so they're looking, seeking, desiring to have peace, to feel better, to not suffer anymore. And they are offered tools, offered ideas, and they say no. So really, then I suppose what I... the truth of that moment or the clarity of that moment for that person in a statement way of putting it out there might look something like or sound something like, I really want to end my suffering, and I want answers that will come to me that are completely in alignment with the way I think they should be. Because anything outside of that, I'm not going to accept. So unless you can tell me exactly what I want to hear, please don't tell me anything at all. Because I'm only going to argue for my limitations, and voila, sure enough, they are mine.
Well, and there is a way that we all create our own worldview. And when we do that, any particular way that we get healthy usually wants to at least be considered to fit into that model that we've already established. But sometimes the funny thing is that we need to start adjusting the model of how things work in the first place in order to actually find that path that does offer us the solution to our current issue. So oftentimes it will not be a solution that looks like a solution to us simply because our worldview is actually not in accordance with what actually works. And so oftentimes it requires us to just take a little bit of a broader viewpoint in order to actually accept the new ways. But really, I mean, for myself, when I'm really looking for a solution, I remain really, really, really open as I can be, even if it doesn't fit into my worldview that this could work. And there are only few things that don't really go into my realm of consideration, but still, I'm willing to at least give it a try. I'm willing to be playful with it. And I think oftentimes we get so serious with having to find particular ways, particular paths, that we get a little stuck in our old ruts. And if the old ruts would work, then we wouldn't be having this issue in the first place. But essentially, then the playfulness at least allows us to have some fun along the way in experimenting and enjoying the ride to finding whatever it is that could potentially help us. And then at that point, I've usually always found some type of solution that did in the end actually work.
Well, and there it is the openness. And I would, you know, love if every human on this planet would just take a breath, breathe in, and then breathe out, and do that a few times, add a couple of sighs in there, and really let everything out, and wonder what it would like to be wide open to all that is, to be wide open to suggestions, to be wide open to being compassionate, to be wide open to not blaming others for one's feelings, for how one thinks, for what one believes should or should not be. What would that be like? Imagine a world where every single human is completely responsible, meaning having the ability to respond to themselves, for their own world, for their own opinions, for their own feelings, for their own actions, for their own judgments. Imagine that.
I hear you there, but I do hear a little bit of a conflict, to be honest.
And really, and what is that?
In so far that when we would be entirely just responsible for our own ways of being, at that point, I don't believe we would ask anything of anyone else in the world or being any different than they already are. At that point, we would take full and complete response. Either it's we take full and complete responsibility for ourselves, or we actually do ask the world to be any different way than it is. Like, for example, either we say that, for example, we take complete responsibility only for the way I feel, but then I'm not really asking anything of the world whatsoever. Or I ask something of the world and essentially then am still somehow trying to fit the conditions of the world to match my ways of wanting it to be.
Okay, I mean, all right, okay, sure. I hear you, and I hear where you're coming from, and from that perspective, I agree. I also believe in the dreamer And I believe that we are dreaming a dream and we can wake up from the dream and create a new dream. And, you know, I'm going to pull out, imagine all the people living in peace. Imagine all the people. Not saying that I need that, because I know that I don't, because I know that I am the creator of my world. And there is this vaster part of me that dreams a dream that looks like an earth with a population where people are fully aware that they're creating their world, where they are taking full responsibility for themselves. And if each person does that, then you're right. We're not asking for anything for anyone else, but it is nice to dream, to imagine a community on a planet where everybody was living in that vibrational state, where they're living from their hearts and they recognize any thoughts that they have are their own, where there is no finger pointing. I'm not saying I need that, but wouldn't that be nice? It's like an artist creates on a blank canvas their dream on the canvas, their vision. Mm-hmm. I think that that's creativity moving through us. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that that has to be done. And wouldn't it be nice, what a nice for me anyway, to imagine a world like that, to imagine what that could be like. Because I know when I'm around people in my life that are of that idea, of that lifestyle, of that choice, the connections and the conversations and the energy and the vibrations that happen are huge. I mean, like you and I, when we hang, we live together, we hang out, we work together, I feel very expanded. There are other people in my life, same thing, girlfriends, other people I speak with, and it feels really good. It feels really open. It's like there's everything is welcome. And even if there's a bruised part that comes up, a tender part that comes up, it's embraced by the person who recognizes it as their own or recognizes it in somebody else, and it's just expanded upon and it just seems to dissipate in love. I'd love to think of a world like that. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that, though there's a part of me that expects myself to align to that vibration.
I really love the idea of being complete. And here's the flip side to expectation. So, and I think this is actually a nice path in so far that, well, what if we would be able to get rid of all expectation? It would permit for much greater fluidity. It would allow for actually being connected with oneself at all times, irrespective of where other people are. And it does allow for an unconditional love for everything that is and oneself within all of that. And it also allows me to recognize a much greater degree of my own free choice that I have to play with people in any which way that they present themselves to me. And I definitely do love when I am so much within myself that I do recognize those times when I have that choice to act in any which way that I feel is most appropriate for me in my life at that time. And I don't need to make it dependent on anyone else or anyone else's behavior. I actually feel at that point when I'm able to stay in myself in that way, no matter how anyone else is behaving, then I'm actually living in that dream already, that I'm actually living in that world where really I don't need to even make it dependent on anyone outside of me, but it is really just me that needs to live that way. And then essentially everyone that I interact with is going to be a reflection of that as well. No matter where they're at, no matter how they behave, no matter how much they're trying to confine me, the confinements that I experience are really then always just a reflection of any confinements that I take on to be in my world as well. Essentially, I'm recreating them for myself at that point too.
Yes. And I really want to speak further too. You spoke of acting appropriately, appropriate behavior for the self, regardless of others. And I think that's a really sweet nugget to expand into, because so many of us have so many rules that we're not even aware of, and a lot of unspoken agreements about how we're to act, how we're to be, our politeness levels, what is acceptable and what is not in a public arena, how we speak to our peers and how we don't, our parents, our children, our friends, if we're in a group, how we address one another, what is taboo, what is not. And for me, the epitome of freedom, of being a creator, really exercising that in an applicable, real world, third dimensional world way, this earth way, is to act, speak, do, dance, shop, eat, screw accordingly to what feels good for you as an individual. And it is my understanding that when we are, in my experience, that when I'm in that place, I'm always acting appropriately for me. I'm always acting in accordance to what feels good for me. And that changes from moment to moment. And let's get real, what I consider to be loving for somebody else could look like indifference. What I consider to be kind may for somebody else seem cruel. So I really get that I can only ever really live in accordance to my own dictionary, in accordance to my own feeling state. And from that, no matter what I do or how I do it, because loving, as an example, a loving act could be very, you know, being very gentle and holding somebody and speaking softly. And at other times, I just had a conversation with my daughter today that she said to me I wasn't being very loving. Well, from my perspective, that was her perspective of it. I wasn't being supportive in that moment. In my perspective, I was being very supportive. I was being very real and very clear and speaking clearly from a place of love. But that changes too. And when we're connected and tapped into who we are and how we feel, when we feel stable, we all know what feels good and what doesn't. We all have that emotional guidance system. We all know in that solar plexus area or inner jaw or wherever it is for you. A lot of people I found it's in their guts. They get that gut knowing, get that solar plexus tweak. When we're speaking in alignment energetically and the words we're using and where we're coming from, most importantly, words often are relevant, more how they're spoken. We know when we're speaking, when we're moving in the right direction of ourselves, because it feels open. And we also know when we're not, because we get that little twist, that torque, that hook. And so when we live from that place within ourselves, it doesn't matter if someone else says we're kind or not, if someone else says we're cruel or not, or we shouldn't have done that, was inappropriate behavior, because we know it was appropriate for us. And we also know, I found, when we're in that place, we mean no harm. But it does become an art of really knowing thyself.
And I think that what really matters is the direction in which we're aiming. If we're truly and honestly aiming in the direction of feeling better, yes, originally when we are coming from a depressed state, we might still be more so circling within unstable emotions. And we might, for example, go through pride at some point, which obviously is known to come before a fall. However, it can also come before more excellence, before more gaining of momentum in a positive way. The only thing is then that when we already are in a territory of unstable emotions, is that we aim in the direction of continuously feeling better and better and better and better and better until we do get into a realm of stable emotions. Because there is a point when we get to neutrality, when we get to acceptance or allowing of things, when things do turn around. There is the point where we then go from what might have seemed like pride and then goes into acceptance, for example. And then we're not so much coming from a lack-based paradigm, but are actually moving into either a neutral or abundance-based paradigm. And it does allow for a very different type of feeling state. And it's okay to move through something even like a pride state for as long as it is not a continued ongoing battle between that and maybe anger that then vacillates between the two. For as long as we continue moving from the lower realms into higher and higher and higher emotions until we find ourselves to be stable again. So it is quite all right to even experience those lower emotions temporarily for as long as we don't get stuck there.
Well, and you know, pride is such a delicious word. You know, the dictionary would define pride as a noun, and interestingly, and it's, it would say that it's a feeling or deep pleasure or satisfaction derived from one's own achievements, the achievements of those with whom one is closely associated, or from qualities or possessions that are widely admired. Of course, there's also, you know, a group of lions. But so for me, again, pride is, like the word manipulation, is not necessarily in and of itself anything negative. Though, like language, it's the energy from which it's coming. So to be proud, to be, you know, I did it, I did great, and to feel good and satisfied and full about that, and to feel proud of someone that they've done something amazing and they feel good about it, is certainly a wonderful, expansive feeling. Now, there's also pride can also, it has such a nuance in it as well. Like manipulation, you manipulate clay to make a cup, which is quite helpful when one is trying to have a cup of coffee. Now, though we can also manipulate clay into becoming a weapon, you know, or to use against someone. And we can also do that with pride. We can be bursting with this wonderful feeling. But if we identify it from an egoic perspective, simply meaning I identify with it as myself, and then I think then it can warp how we feel because we become so attached to that achievement or so attached to that characteristic that it bruises our true identity. It veils us a little bit, and then we become more enchanted and enamored with that quality, and it narrows our focus, and we begin to believe that we are that and must be that. And that's where that saying, I feel, that pride becomes before a fall. Because I'm so proud that I'm hanging on so tight that this is my achievement. And we know that everything is always evolving and moving forward. And so if that falls away or some, you know, you have to go up for the next race or the next thing and you have to let that go, it's as though for a lot of people, their very identity, who they were. We hear that when people telling in high school were the best years of my life, I was the football. There's jokes about that, all these American sitcoms. I was the quarterback. And it's like, that's their proud moment and nothing could ever hold light to that, nor could they ever, they live their life in comparison to that one moment, that shining moment of glory. And it goes and they fall after that because they can't hang on to that moment forever.
So, if you would like to actually join our conversation, or if you have a question about what we're talking about, or about life in general, or if there is anything in your life that you would like to see more of that you're currently desiring, please give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. Or to find that number, you can also go to bbsradio.com/thespring, and you will see the call in live number 1-888-627-6008 on the left-hand side. We'd love to hear from you. And I so agree with...
One thing just to that service announcement. Sorry, thank you. You can also come to our page and click the fast chat icon, and you can chat us up and ask your questions that way as well.
And what you were talking about there with pride, I definitely do agree that there can be two different types of versions of pride. One that is more the traditional view, where essentially there seems to be some attachment of the self, or ego for that matter, to whatever the creation or experience it is that we had. And at that point, it's almost like some part of who we think we are now gets wrapped up in this thing that we might have just created. Now, when someone comes along and might ruin it by accident or something like it, it's almost like we're experiencing a great loss of ourselves.
Right, as if someone took our limb from us.
Absolutely. And whereas when we, the other version, I would almost describe a little more like joy. It doesn't seem to have that attachment of self in it, where we are so joyful about the creation that even if it is broken or destroyed, it might have a little bit of a feeling, what a shame. But the contentness of it having been there still outweighs, and we don't feel like a part of us has been taken because we still had the pleasure of the experience or just the joy. And it's not so much that it is like there is something taken from us in that instant. And
why isn't it like that also with expectations? When we have this expectation of somebody acting a certain way and we hold them up on a platform as an example, or, you know, we just know they would never do something like that, or we have their idea of who they are as a cardboard cutout and it's stagnant and that's who they are. And then when they delineate from that and they do something out of character or out of our preconceived story of who they are, then we, it's as though they have ripped from us our identity of our story about that person. And it can be quite painful. You know, I've never thought you would do that. And I mean, in marriages where someone has an affair, that happens. That's a, you know, pretty wild one. Or somebody, you find out that somebody is been doing drugs or lying. You think they would never do that. They acted so out of character. How can that be possible? The only character they acted outside of was the character that you gave them, because every person in each of our lives is only ever our story of them. And sometimes we build people up in such a way that we want to hang on to that story. Children do that with their parents, and we do that with our partners or our best friends, or the, you know, our new gym buddy who we just love. We've got so much in common. And then by week three, something goes awry and suddenly they're not the same person. We're not as enamored anymore. What changed? Did they change, or our story about them, our thoughts about them? Because suddenly they stepped out of that little box that we put them in. And no matter how generous that box, a box is a box. And the same thing happens when we, you know, make someone a bully, or we have a story about how bad someone is. There are, you know, good mother-in-law stories are like that. We peg someone into that box, you know, villain, hero, good guy, bad guy. And no matter what they do, they'll always be tainted by our story. And the story taints the true experience of what's really there. So my question being to myself and to all of you out there, and to you, my wonderful co-host, Benjamin, can we ever live without our story? Who are we without our story? Is it possible? Or does our story just keep adjusting?
Well, we got to see then a little bit what is really happening there, because our story most often is more thought or is more created for the purpose of actually assisting us navigate the world. But when we allow our stories to take on so much of a life that we believe more in the stories than necessarily in what's actually happening, then we start to almost vehemently with our own lives defend our story over what's happening in reality. And now we're trying to adjust reality to match our story rather than just adjusting our story. And what we have to recognize is that the model that we create on our inner worlds is really just like a 3D version of the outer world that is supposed to assist us in navigating this place and making it easier. And when we try to fit the territory into the map that we created for it, that's a little backwards. We should more so try to adjust the maps to make them more precise to the territory and recognize that the territory does also change, and that with the changes, it is a hell lot easier to continue adjusting the maps rather than now trying to put a new piece of land somewhere or cut a piece of land out to put a body of water where there used to be one, but there is none anymore, so that we somehow can feel our identity intact because we had created a story or a thought of the world that now had almost seemingly become more concrete than what we actually see in front of us. And then it does get challenging. It does require a lot of effort to keep maintaining that type of a world when really the world just keeps flowing continuously anyway, and we need to start recognizing that beliefs actually work in a way such that they try to reinforce themselves. They do have sort of blinders on them because they do believe that if this belief is correct, then the other options must not be accurate. But we also have to recognize that we are the creators of beliefs and that we can also undo them if necessary. And if we give beliefs so much of a life that they are seemingly their own entities, then they can start to grab a hold of us rather than us being the masters of our own beliefs. And it's important to master our own inner worlds and thoughts to an extent such that we are capable of adjusting these nuances and definitions and ideas to a degree that we are the masters of our worlds and our thought worlds don't start to become the masters of ourselves. That's usually when people talk about the ego taking over.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's astounding to me, having done so much personal work and pretty much, just living a really luxurious life that where every day is like a vacation. And I just love what I do. I love, love, love everything that I do. And when I'm not, I don't do it. And sometimes I struggle with that because we all still have programming. But overall, I'd say 98.957.200% of the time, I'm living a wonderful, joyous life. And I recognized as I got here, because it was an unfolding. I love that old onion analogy. It's still fairly appropriate. But the amount of energy that I spend in defending my beliefs, in defending how things are supposed to stay the same, in defending, trying to make, as you spoke to, which I love that analogy, the map and the territory. I spent so much energy trying to conform the territory to fit my outdated map. It was phenomenal. And when I finally stopped and got real and said, okay, so what's here now? What's really here now? And I started to play more with my internal world. I had more energy. I had more vibrancy. I felt better in my body, in my mind, more relaxed. My body was working better. I just had more spring in my step, more tune in my song. It was much easier to navigate the world. Rather than taking all of this energy, this life force, and trying to make others fit into the shoebox that I had carved for them in my mind, I started to ask myself, who said this is true? According to what? And like, big deal. And then ask, why do I need that person to be this way? What am I believing when I see them acting this way instead of the way I think they are? What do I need? Who would I be if I didn't believe this? Who says it's okay or not okay? Where did that come from? And I started to investigate myself. And of course, there's countless tools. I mean, come to the springoflifecenter.com and we'll happily share those with you. But there's so many tools out there where you can just step into yourself and build a new map. You get to build a new map. You get to rewrite your map. You can have a whole clean slate. I heard this great word the other day, tabula rasa. And of course, Ben, you told me what that meant. I thought it was just something. It sounded so exotic and flavorful and fragrant and spicy and sweet all at the same time. A clean slate. You can clean your map and create a new one daily. So if somebody that you know well acts in a surprising way, you'll actually experience it as a surprise. Ooh, that was interesting. Rather than getting out the billy clubs and trying to beat them into submission to reform themselves back into the map, we get to explore others and ourselves by staying open from a clean, wide open slate, meeting everyone and everything as if for the first time. And those places that are a little bit harder to, let go of or move through because they're so ingrained or there's still some stuff around it, we can actually enjoy and celebrate those and laugh. I mean, as an example, my daughter's visiting and I just went off on my, I said, I'm not going to tell you what to do anymore. And then I immediately started telling her what to do. Well, not immediately. I lasted about a day. And on day two, I just started going, okay, you should be doing this. And I heard myself and she just looked at me and I said, look, I'm going to pull a Byron Katie and I'm going to say, I'm your mother. And I'm doing my job. And my job in your world is to tell you what to do. At least it is right now because that's where I'm standing. And I was okay with that. We both had a giggle and we were out raking the stones from the snow plow off of the lawn. I don't know how a snow plow could throw those stones 5 feet onto the lawn, but anyway, that's a story for another day. And it became okay. It became light between us. So I was allowed to embrace that part, let it play out, and be okay with it instead of telling myself I shouldn't be doing that, especially where I am in my path as a healer and a life alchemist and blah, 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 I should know better. Well, I was flogging myself and it didn't feel authentic. What felt authentic was I wanted to tell her what to do and how to do it and when to do it because I thought that that would make me feel better and it felt good to say that. And in being open with that and recognizing, of course, that it's ultimately irrelevant, I allowed myself off the hook in speaking it to her. It let her off the hook of having to defend why she isn't doing it or telling me why I should be minding my own business. And we giggled about it. Life becomes a lot easier that way when we're willing to adjust our map. Because, you know, she can't change her mother on the spot because her mother's not willing to change right there. Or just, yeah, can't right then. In that moment, it's just not happening. That's all.
The moment has already occurred. So, but one question that actually came into my mind was, why would we want to not change the world and rather change our own selves? Why would we even want to go about doing it that way? And
question. I'm glad you called in. Thank you.
Now, one thing that came to me was, well, really, my question underneath it all is, how does it feel? How does it all feel? And I know when I have tried to change the world to match my ways of perceiving the way things should be. And that when generally I tried to make the world fit my way, that I started to struggle. It was an uphill battle, and even if temporarily I was able to readjust the world or have someone else conform to my ways, that, wow, whew, not only was it a battle, but then I could temporarily be happy with it, but shortly thereafter something else changed. And then I had to put up more effort, and again and again and again, it was more of a perpetual thing that was getting to be tiring very quickly. On the other hand, sometimes it might seem at first that I'm just giving in when I start to change my own views. It can sometimes feel at first like I am hurting as well, but it is a different sort of pain. It is not the same kind of pain. It is the pain of losing illusion. It is the pain of being disillusioned. And there is a sort of pain in that as well. But the beautiful thing is that usually by going about it that way, by being disillusioned and allowing myself to grow from that and growing beyond it, I gain a power, a flexibility, a skill within my own self that is so deliciously pleasant that no matter how much I would be able to make the world conform to me, me being able to gain the power of creative freedom to view a deeper truth within myself that actually seems to be more true than what I was holding on to before, actually allowed me to grow as a person and eventually brought about pleasure that having a world conforming to my original beliefs would never be able to provide me. In the end, it actually allowed me not only a freedom, surprisingly, of actually living a more free life by being disillusioned, but also a degree of pleasure and flexibility of playing with the world no matter what comes, that fewer and fewer things in the world are able to knock me off my rocker.
You are off your rocker. I so love that. You know, that was a really brilliant explanation and a sharing of your experience. Thank you for that. And what just kept coming to me is in that pain that you spoke of and referred to in the disillusionment, the disrobing of that illusion, there is pain in that. And, you know, if any waking up, there's a moving from one octave, one way of being to another. There is some discordant sounds and feelings that come on the way there, but it's well worth it. And the one thing that kept coming to me was that, you know, in my trip, it was as though I had to lose my innocence in order to gain my innocence, to lose the innocence of thinking that I could have a tantrum or pull a scene or force someone, strong arm someone or something into changing to please me. And often I did, as I'm sure we all have done in one way or another. And that changes for a short period of time. And it seems that, I could finally relax, and because I had won and everything was peaceful. And then sure enough, like a geyser, up it would come again. And there was a loss of innocence when I recognized that I cannot change anyone else. I cannot make them change or beg them to change or bribe them to change or guilt them to change or anger them to change or tantrum them to change. There's just no way. But there was a loss of innocence for me in that, because I always thought that I could. I suppose as we, you know, as children maybe have that idea that if, you know, we cry, we get picked up. And perhaps there's a part of us that maintains that into adulthood. If I kick up my heels enough, I'll get what I want. But when we grow, and as we evolve and mature, and we recognize that that's not going to happen, and we take a different road, and we start changing our map, there is a loss of that illusion, a loss of that innocence. But what is so beautiful, I have found, is that coming out the other side, there's this incredible newly found, newly remembered and reawakened and realized state of innocence that is so free, because it, for me, it's just, I get to experience what's in front of me from a very innocent, wide open state. There, I have so much joy in hearing a woodpecker or seeing a heron fly over overhead, or watching the birds or the dog, or seeing you or having a cup of coffee. There seems to be a newly found innocence that is grander and has more passion and more intensity, more light. Everything seems to look as if it stands out a little bit more. And it's worth going through that birth canal, because it is like a rebirth into a new way of being in the world and experiencing the world.
That's a very interesting concept, because I know what you're talking about with having the perception of losing one's own innocence, yet to a degree, then there might be a time when we thought the world was one way, we find out that our viewpoint didn't match that, and all of a sudden, when we find that out, we struggle with that new viewpoint simply because it seems to be so contradictory, not only to what we thought here, but many other beliefs that we carried that this first idea was founded upon, such that when we have a new realization, we then all of a sudden need to not only revisit this particular thought, but a lot of other base ideas, and it's almost like we're robbed from our innocence that we believe the world to be one way, and it requires some re-examination at some deeper core beliefs, which oftentimes aren't necessarily readily available at that time. And it feels for a while like there is conflict there. But when we dig deeper and deeper and deeper, then all of a sudden we might be able to find those beliefs that we held on so erroneously. And all of a sudden, we're gaining a different type of innocence that wasn't quite there before because we sort of were believing the lies that we were telling ourselves continuously. And by having that disillusionment of regaining a new clarity, it's almost like we're gaining a deeper sense of innocence, but also recognizing that we never really lost our innocence in the first place, but that we are in constant transformation. And with that transformation, we might forget about our innocence, or incomplete innocence create an experience of not being innocent or not feeling innocent at that time, when really that in itself is also sort of an innocent experience. And it's sort of that we can create ourselves to appear not innocent, but in a certain sense, there is also some part of us that does remain that way and remain innocent, and that can access that type of a feeling no matter what we have done, because there is also a fresh part within us that is constantly being reborn. And actually, by going back into the depth of our own self and rediscovering new parts and recreating new parts of ourselves, we're actually tapping back into that type of a fresh, new type of experience that feels so tender because we are rediscovering how we are constantly creating a new version of ourselves, how we constantly are being reborn, and that we're not really made by the past, but that we can in the present actually shift the way the past appears to us. And that oftentimes it is the memory of the past that we carry now that creates the past from the present, or at least allows us to reconnect with it from this place, and that each place has its own complete coherence, and that none of these places are really, in their entirety, any more or less innocent than another. We can take on shame even from others if we want.
Take on what?
Shame or guilt, or
Yes.
we can play out dramas where we fill certain roles, but if in a later point we forgive and allow ourselves to shed the roles that we had taken on, we can re-experience a fresh new self that is free of any of those roles, and in that we can always regain innocence as well.
Yes, I'm, you know, innocence is such an interesting word. It's such an interesting feeling, and it changes like all feelings, and wants to be recreated and renoticed again and again. You know, often I've heard people say in long-term relationships, you know, whether they're married or not or whatever their form of that marriage for themselves is, and I'm speaking specifically to intimate relationships, I've heard so many people say, oh, they've lost the spark, or it's just not the same. And I say, isn't that great? Of course it's not the same. You wouldn't want it to be the same. You wouldn't want to eat the same meal or drink the same thing or wear the same underwear every day. And there's a way in which, though, we can innocently meet the person we're with time and time and time again. And that refreshing, that recreation in a relationship starts with the recreation of the innocence and the refreshing. I like that word, to refresh ourselves, to reboot ourselves every day, to deliberately decide and steer and guide our consciousness and our awareness to a place first thing in the morning where we're going to be fully present. It's a new day, and I am wide open to experiencing the delight and the joyousness and the beauty and the radiance and the uniqueness of this day, of myself and of my beloved. I'm just so excited to experience what's going to unfold with us today. I'm so excited to see their face and to feel how I feel when I experience my sweetheart. And it is from that fresh, new, innocent, deliberately created, wide open self that is ready to embrace and play with what, in a fluid manner, whatever shows up, that every day in a relationship with a sweetheart can be glorious and magical and filled with, oh, nuances of, oh, watching just the way their lips upturn in a half a smile, or, you know, the way they just turn their head, or the little lines in their forehead happen when they're looking at the computer screen, or the way they're always reaching for their coffee cup and they miss it just by an inch until they find it. You know, we can choose to be irritated by the toilet seat up or down, or we can choose to be delightfully enchanted by it. And if our bums hit the toilet water, we can be amused by that. Oh, well, next time maybe I'll put my hand up or down to check the toilet seat. And we can be responsible for ourselves, innocent in the experience of whatever is there, and really live a delightful, happy, lush, beautiful life.
Actually, the whole discussion I find really quite interesting in so far that there is the whole idea between safety and excitement. There is the seeming contradiction of knowing someone and at the same time wanting to grow with someone, wanting to rediscover, wanting to have that fresh new experience. And very often couples do seem to struggle with that, such that they seemingly want to know each other. They want that safety. They want to be able to rely on that stability. And at the same time, they really love that excitement and the rush and the newness of the relationship that was in its beginning stages. And they seem to be sort of mutually exclusive. But what we've been talking about here is almost like building up an expectation of what the other is like or what oneself is like, but actually engaging in that possibility of reinventing and changing one's own viewpoints changes oneself and the other just the same, and allows for more flexibility for the other person to be the way they are, for oneself to be the way oneself is, and to open the doors of having an understanding for oneself and the other, as well as for a growing, for an expansion, which essentially also allows for a continued rediscovery of not only oneself, but the other just the same. It brings that excitement back into play. So by actually finding one's own expectations and adjusting them, oneself is growing, but even bringing more excitement to one's relationship with another or with the world at large. It actually lends itself for more playfulness and much more beauty to be rediscovered over and over and over, rather than having one static way and feeling just rigidly safe in it and then wondering why things get boring.
And much more innocence. Because there is, even the beginning stages of a relationship, there is an excited innocence. We don't know what the other person's like, really. And there is this innocent, oh, and it's exciting. I wonder how they're going to react. I wonder what it's like to have dinner with them. I wonder what it's like to sleep with them. I wonder, you know, what their house looks like. I wonder what they'll be like with my friends. And there's an innocence in that, and an looking forward to an enthusiasm, an eagerness, a friskiness. And we can recreate that by choice, and it has to be recreated every day. Every day it wants to be recreated. All spiritual aspects, calm, peace, connection, tapping into source, your own excitement. That's the creation. You are the creator, and it wants to be recreated. It wants to be chosen, and to really enjoy it and milk those magical moments. They're like panacea. They're ambrosia. It's delightful. And it's hard to find words that are poetic enough to, because of course, they're just words. They're just little scribbly lines on a page that we put together. And I just love to speak of this, and we would love to open with you further on our website at springoflifecenter.com. That's CENTER.com. And we also have another radio show. We'd love for you to join us there as well on Thursdays between 3 and 5 EST, or so I know it's EDT now, Eastern Time, I'll say, at freedomslips.com, Studio B. And we're called the Inner Revolution there. And we love so much to speak with you and to share with you how you can create a juicy, delicious life. Thank you, Benjamin, for another wonderful, wonderful broadcast here on bbsradio.com, the Spring of Life show.
Always a pleasure to be hosting with you. Thank you so much for having me. And please come visit our website at Spring of Life Center. You can also go to bbsradio.com/thespring to get that link for our website. We will be posting some teleconferences upcoming in the near future. So if you want to work on this more concretely, feel free to join us there. Thank you so much.
Happy spring, everyone. Thank you. And thanks, Doug, to our wonderful engineer and producer for hanging with us every week and for this platform. You so rock.